This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to the Division 3 podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, here with a special guest, Salisbury coach Jim Berkman. The Seagulls won a big game last night, 17-5 against Cabrini in the NCAA quarterfinals. They advanced to the semifinals, where they will play Denison, defending their national championship. Coach Berkman, this was a pretty complete win last night. How are you feeling today?
Well, you know, we're excited about what happened last night. We were proud of our effort on all aspects of the game. And, you know, we're excited to advance to the national semifinals and be hosting Denison at 1 o'clock on Sunday.
You know, we were joking in the office that, you know, you beat Salisbury once. You better hope that you don't play them again later in the year. You know, you lost to Cabrini. That was the one loss of this season so far, a Thursday game earlier in the season. And then you come back with such a complete effort. The resiliency of this team to face a team and lose and then come back and have an effort like this, what does it say about your guys?
Well, you know, I think in our back of our minds, you know, we were kind of off a little bit on in the Cabrini game up there. We didn't play, but to their credit, you know, and then we had that unfortunate incident where the player was ejected of the game at 3 minutes, a 3 minute penalty at the end that allowed them to score four, you know, man up goals or whatever it was. That kind of hovered, I think, as a little bit of in the back of everybody's mind. And, you know, I think everybody wanted another chance to redeem ourselves, that wasn't one of our better efforts. And we definitely did that last night.
When you look at this team, you know, you're heading into this key run here, two games away from, you know, potentially winning a national championship. Do you feel like you're playing the best lacrosse of your season right now?
Yeah, I feel that, you know, we have 9 or 10 kids. You know, we had, well, the 10th offensive player that came in a game last night, Zach Pompey, and had a great split dodge and stuck a sick goal in the third quarter when the Heat kind of took a toll on a couple middies. And, you know, so it's exciting to see the ball movement that we're possessing at this point and the efficiency on offense, you know, and the competitiveness, you know, at the defensive end to hold teams down.
Coach, this defense is something really special. You know, I'd argue it's the best defense I've seen out of Salisbury, you know, since those teams a decade ago that were fairly dominant. And can you just explain what is so good about them and how do these pieces on the defense interact so well to be such a strong unit here?
Well, obviously, any good defense has got to have a good goalie, you know, and Colin Raymond's had a good run. I feel kind of disappointed that he hasn't gotten the recognition he deserves. You know, he was the MVP of the championship game last year. You know, and for some reason in our conference, he didn't make all conference, which is just it's almost criminal based on his performance once again last night. But he, you know, he's an outstanding goalie, you know, and it's one of our best close defenses that I think that we've ever had because, you know, we've had two really outstanding guys before and we have that once again, you know, the two legit, you know, All-Americans that were second team of sophomores, Kyle Tucker and Will Nowazik. But Aaron Leeds is probably, you know, we talk about guys, is probably the most unheralded guy. But Aaron Leeds is probably the best third defenseman that's ever played here. You know, his stick skills are just off the chart. He gets the ball off the deck. He can guard, you know, anybody. And he just loves lacrosse and has improved immensely. So, you know, we have three very talented guys down there. You know, again, last night we were 24 for 25 clearing, and the only one we missed was when a freshman subbed in it for when Will was hurt and threw the ball away on a 60-yard pass. So the efficiency of our clearing has been just truly incredible because of their stick skills. And then you have Andrew Turnahan, who's, you know, one of the best long sticks in the country, returning. And the, you know, the big thing I think that has really put the whole package together for us is that, you know, we graduated Preston Dabbs Player of the Year and Davis Anderson, who are both four-year starters at D-Mitty, and that was the big, hey, what are we, because they're the key to any defense. And Troy Miller, a converted attack Mitty, a very athletic kid, has done an outstanding job, a great stick between the lines. And then switching Jeremiah LeClaire from a long stick to a short stick, he's just, you know, and with good size, has just really just gotten better every game because it's his first season ever with a short stick, has really made that defensive unit, you know, kind of special.
You mentioned Preston Dabbs and his graduation. How hard was it kind of throughout the season to replace him? And when did you kind of feel like these guys got to a point where you feel really comfortable and really excited about their play at the short stick position?
Well, it just every day you could see it get to be a little bit better. As you know, as Jeremiah Stickfield got a little bit better, he was already really well versed on playing defense, and he was a good position player. And you know, Troy, we converted him at the end of last season, and he actually kind of played in the third spot a little bit. You know, and he continued to get better. But then, you know, the other part of that equation is, you know, we have another sophomore, Parker Stevenson, who's like the third D-mitty, but rotates in there regularly, who's one of the fastest guys on the team. So the unit has great speed. And, you know, to their credit, they're probably, in regard to the stick skills, you know, threats in transition, threats on offense, you know, are a step and a cut above what we actually have been in the last 4 years.
Coach, your face-off guy, Duncan Campbell, how do you feel about his bounce back from, you know, he missed the national championship game last year. What have you seen from him in terms of his kind of resiliency coming in and having a good season for you?
Well, you know, he's worked really hard. He's definitely a guy that's into the technique part and always wanting to improve. You know, and he's always, you know, when somebody beats him, he always seems to come back and get him, you know, the next time. But, you know, that unit is not just Duncan Campbell. That unit is TJ Logue also. You know, and TJ came in last night. The other kid got dunked a couple early, and then TJ came in and had some great wins. So, you know, it's kind of a two-headed monster, and I think moving forward that, you know, that both of them are critical to our success.
You look at this offense and Nathan Blondino, you know, he had 5 assists last night. Carson Kalama, 6 goals. There's just so many pieces on this offense that can kind of so many pieces that can get you. If one guy has an off night, there's going to be someone else who's going to be on. The depth of players who can make plays on this offense, how good is that for you this season?
Well, it's a very unique offensive team. It's not the typical middies running downhill dodging type of team. It's almost like we're playing with 9 attackmen the way we play. You know, it doesn't matter who you pull or who you short stick. You know, we kind of play and draw dodges and then move the ball real quickly in tight space. It's almost a little bit of a box game, you know, with 9 different guys able to play it that play in tight space and are real good at you know, they don't care who all of them can handle the ball against the pole with absolutely no worries. So, you know, it's a very unique the way that the whole group has evolved. And they all are extremely unselfish. And, you know, when you're unselfish and you move the ball and you have guys like Kalama and Garbarino who are unbelievable finishers at the end of those things, you know, good things happen.
I don't think I've seen a ball that Garbarino couldn't finish. He's just got an insane knack for the back of the net. Coach, this was your 500th win at Salisbury. You had your 500th win overall earlier in the season. The longevity, you know, a place like Salisbury, what is it about Salisbury that has kept you there so long and has allowed you to be successful for so long?
Well, it's a combination of things. First of all, we're a very progressive university that's continually grown, and as we've grown, we've really done a great job of becoming a very, very strong academic institution with a tremendous business school. You know, we've built our infrastructure both on the academic level and at the athletic level. It continues to expand to rival any school across the country when we talk about academic facilities now and athletic facilities with our new stadium and our new baseball and softball stadiums that are going up. That, you know, you have a first-class product, you know, both in the classroom and on the field that allows you to be successful. And, you know, the Eastern Shore is a pretty special place to live. You know, you can come to work and have a chance to win, and at the same time, you know, you're in Mother Nature's playground. You know, the ocean's on one side, the bay's on the other, all these back roads for bike riding and motorcycling and great waters and creeks for boating and fishing. It's a pretty special place to live, and, you know, kind of got the best of all worlds for the things that, you know, that I really enjoy.
Certainly one of the great coaches of all time that you are. I'm curious, who are some of the coaches, whether they be in lacrosse or other sports, that you admire and kind of have learned from and looked up to?
Well, I think the first guy I have to definitely mention is my high school basketball coach, Lou Kibling, you know, who I think was a great mentor for me, and it was a person that really got me excited, I think, you know, back in ninth and tenth grade, and about wanting to become a coach. And, you know, he was just a guy that was a gym rat, and, you know, kind of like I grew up to be. And, you know, and it was a great inspiration and a great mentor for me when I was in high school. You know, Coach Leet, my lacrosse coach at St. Lawrence, was a great mentor and just kind of a person that showed you the other side, not so much of the X's and O's, but just a good caring man that always was there for you, that I learned from. You know, I was fortunate in my senior year in college that Hank Jancic, who's at Gettysburg now, was the assistant at St. Lawrence, and he got the head job at Salisbury my senior year and asked me to come to Salisbury with him. You know, and that was the key to me actually coming back to Salisbury to be the head coach. But I had a great 2 years learning from Hank and about dedication and effort and commitment to getting better and improving. That, you know, that was a big inspiration for me.
You've been around a lot of championship teams. You've led a lot of championship teams. What is that small difference between a great team and a championship team in your eyes? And right now, do you think that this team has it, or is it something that you don't know until the season's over?
Well, I think to win a championship in lacrosse, you got to have a player at every position that is potentially a first-team All-American, you know, because the teams are that good. And, you know, we're kind of in that position right now, as we have been in the past, you know, that Nate Blondino now with 129 points is a valuable first-team All-American, if not Player of the Year candidate. You know, Brendan Bromwell is a big-time middie, not only on the offensive end, but, you know, he's the complete middie, the wing face-off guy. If we're going to stop team at the end of the game, he's going to play defense. You know, you got a great long stick in Turnahan, who's returning third-team All-American. You have two legitimate, potentially first-team All-American, potential defenseman of the year, Will Nozak and Tucker, and then you have a goalie, you know, that's not going to get the recognition he deserves, but was MVP in a championship game. So, you know, you got those pieces to build around, and those are the kind of players that makes everybody else around them better at their position. You know, all those pieces are in place, you know, and that's, you know, I think is why one of the reasons we've been so successful this season.
Your next opponent is Denison. They put a hurting on Lynchburg last night. They had a really good game in that game in the other South quarterfinal. And, you know, they've got a playmaker, Liam Rooney, who's among the best in the nation. What have you seen from them, and how difficult of a contest is it going to be for you?
Well, you know, they're extremely well coached. Coach Caravano, you know, is a great coach. He's always done a great job there. And, you know, they don't beat themselves. You have to beat them. You know, they have good players at every position. You know, they have a transfer faceoff kid that's been critical to their success because of the number of possessions they're giving that strong offensive group. Obviously, Rooney is a great playmaker that, you know, now has 80 some assists and 120 some points, and they got a couple young kids that are playing pretty well, you know, a couple kids that really weren't in the mix for them last year that have really stepped up, and, you know, Petrov, a freshman, and a Butler, a sophomore who didn't play there last year, who have had outstanding seasons. So, you know, they definitely are a talented team. They're well coached. And they have solid players at every position. It's going to be a battle on Sunday as it was last year.
Coach, overall, the landscape of Division III lacrosse, you've been around it for a long time now. How great is this product on the field?
Well, you know, the game is just expanding so quickly that, you know, there's players everywhere. And, you know, and every year the Division III field gets a little deeper and deeper. You know, there's still the traditional teams that are hovering around the top because of their traditions. And I think that'll always be the case, whether it's D3 or D1. But, you know, the level of play from the 15 to the 45 and 50 group is really improved dramatically as the talent pool, you know, has increased and the level of club lacrosse and all this stuff. But I think that's only going to continue to improve, and you're going to see several more teams that are, and several more one-goal games, and several more teams knocking off teams that you didn't suspect, because, you know, the landscape and the number of kids playing the game, and, you know, there's players everywhere. They're not just on the East Coast or New York anymore, or Long Island or Maryland. They're in California, they're in Texas, they're in Florida, they're in Canada, they're everywhere. So, you know, the game is definitely going to get better, and each level, the level of quality teams is going to continue to get deeper also.
Coach, my last thing for you. This Sunday, you guys versus Denison. If you're a fan of college lacrosse, you should be there. Coach, can you kind of give me the sales pitch? If you're someone who's kind of in the area within a 2-3 hour drive or able to watch at home, why should you tune into this game?
Well, I think that you're going to see lacrosse played the way it was meant to be played. You know, there's not going to, you know, Coach Caravan and myself, are both pretty strict about what we do, but within that confines, create a little freedom. You know, the game's going to be a little faster than watching a D1 game where everything's controlled, and, you know, you're going to see some people allowed to do some creative things, and you're going to see extremely high level of skill, and you're going to see some two talented offensive teams. It's a great venue. It's one of the best venues in lacrosse now with our new stadium, and we have a tremendous following. There's going to be a lot of people in the stands. It'll be an exciting game, you know, I'm sure, and one that will be played at an extremely high level.
Coach, I appreciate the time. Congrats on win number 500 at Salisbury, and good luck in the NCAA semifinals versus Denison.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on the Division III podcast. That was Salisbury coach Jim Berkman talking about his big win against Cabrini last night. Salisbury avenged their only loss of the season, dominating Cabrini in the NCAA quarterfinals, and they will meet Denison this weekend in the NCAA semifinals. The Seagulls defending their championship and seem to be the favorite heading into the semifinal weekend. I'm joined by Josh Davey here to talk a little bit more about D3, talk about last night's games, and look ahead to the semifinals. Josh, you look at the landscape last night. We had four great games, some blowouts, some close ones. But what was your biggest takeaway? What was the game that stood out to you?
I think Salisbury getting the chance to play Cabrini again. You know, the first time they played was their second game in 24 hours. I know they had some sort of unreleasable penalty towards the end of that game. And just coming out and just taking the wheels off this thing. I mean, 17-5, dominating. 17 is an impressive number, but I think even the more impressive number is giving up five goals to a Cabrini team that has been an offensive powerhouse historically and even so this year. So I think, you know, the continued success of that Salisbury defense is going to continue to give people problems, you know, moving forward in the last two games of the season. So that's, you know, a big one. And unfortunately, my Hornets took a pretty big L as well, falling to Denison out there in Ohio, getting doubled up 18-9. Kind of looks like they just ran out of steam. And then, you know, just briefly looking at some of the other ones, you know, Wesleyan, a great 14-13 victory over Bates. Wesleyan, you know, you mentioned it before the podcast, you know, are they this team of destiny kind of? We'll get into some of the analytics of some of the teams that have made this far soon here. But and then RIT taking it to Cortland, who had an impressive run, beating St. Lawrence pretty handily last week. RIT being able to pull that one 15-9. So I think you have the four best teams in Division III lacrosse who are left right now. I don't think that anyone's been left out. When you look at some of these scores, especially in the South with two kind of, bigger disparities in terms of the points being scored. But in the North, I think Wesleyan has earned the right to be there. I think RIT has been there that good all season. I think these are the four most deserving teams for sure. And I think they're the four best teams right now in Division III lacrosse who will be moving on to the semifinals.
This conversation I just had, just got off the phone with Coach Berkman. You know, we were talking about his defense, and to me, it's the best defense that, you know, he's had there since those, you know, amazing teams, you know, a decade ago. You know, those defenses were things of legends, the way that those guys played. The thing that struck me about Coach Berkman's conversation he said that he's always had two great defensemen on every team he's had. But this year, Aaron Leeds, his third defenseman, He says it's the best third defenseman he's ever coached, which to me is really an amazing feat and something that's pretty shocking and pretty scary if you're any of these teams. You know, as we know, when it comes down to NCAA tournament time, the top matchup versus the top matchup is generally, you know, you're the best versus the best. So a lot of times it comes down to that third or fourth matchup. And Salisbury, your third go-to scorer, is matched up against a defenseman who arguably is a first-team All-American as well as the other two guys that are with him. So, you know, that really, to me, is really one of the things that separates Salisbury this year. Obviously, you know, they have All-Americans at every position. They have an offense that, you know, the way that Coach Berkman describes it, it's basically nine attackmen who are out there. And, you know, Carson Kalama had six goals last night. You know, Nick Garbarino is a guy who can just put the ball in the net. Blondino kind of runs the show out there. You know, this is really a great team, but Denison, I feel like, just doesn't get enough credit for how good they are this year. You know, obviously, maybe it's a little bit geography bias, you know, why they're not as well known. You know, we did a story about Liam Rooney a few weeks ago, and he's just had an incredible season, you know, kind of player of the year candidate type season. He had a goal and five assists last night. But looking at their score sheet from last night, there's a lot of contributors in this offense. Spencer Butler has had, you know, obviously he's the beneficiary of a lot of what Rooney does, but in the two games in this postseason, he had 11 goals in the first round game, and then last night he had five goals. That's, you know, absolutely insane. And they had, you know, five different guys with multi-goal games in that contest. So I think Salisbury is still the favorite. I just don't think people should sleep on Denison, so to speak. You know, I think they're a very good team that, you know, maybe is a little bit under the radar.
I think that your point even is exuded and holds more weight now than ever has. I think we've gotten so far away, or not so far away, but you see so much less, and I think all across Division 1, 2, and 3 landscape of these big midfield downhill Dodgers. And I think the emphasis to put points on the board has fallen a lot to attack across the board in all lacrosse. And to have that third defenseman be the first defenseman on almost every other team in college lacrosse speaks even more to why they're giving up five goals to a team like Cabrini. I mean, you don't see those guys who are just dodging, barreling down the midfield, scoring goals like that. You know, you have like Perkovic in D1, but you know, no one else really jumps off the page in any level right now as those guys. Everything is kind of generated from attack. So to have that third guy speaks volumes. And as far as Denison, you know, yes, they gave up 19 goals. They gave up nine goals. They scored 18, but their goalie makes four saves. Lynchburg just couldn't generate offense as well. So a defense I'm not as familiar with, you know, yes, they give up nine goals, but in that second half really bunkered down, you know, hunkered down and didn't give much up against a Lynchburg team that has some power on the offensive side. So I think Denison is onto something as well. You know, not being, they won a lot of faceoffs. You know, Lynchburg went down early and then could not win faceoffs, which I'm sure will be a big storyline moving forward. And when your goalie only has to make four saves, you know, it's pretty easy. You know, they made it look easy yesterday. So, you know, Lynchburg will have to go back to the drawing board next season. But the Liam Rooney kid is awesome. He is super dynamic. And I'm looking forward to see how his skill set matches up against that tough Salisbury defense on Sunday.
I know we're talking a lot about the South here. It's a little tilted in our conversation, you know, to the South. But one thing I wanted to bring up about Denison is I remember being at the Mustang Classic and talking with Coach Caravana. And he was talking about how good this team was and just what I said. You know, he thinks that they're overlooked because of where they're located. But what really struck me was his change in mentality. He's really loosened the reins on this team. He's kind of trusting his players to go and do some really good things. You know, he's been more of a conservative coach, but he's loosened that up a little bit. And I think you've seen that pay dividends. Coach Berkman said, you know, this is going to be a fun offensive game, you know, where the coaches who can be strict on their players in terms of, you know, the way they run them in practice and stuff, but they're loose in how they let them play on game day. So this is going to be a really, really fun one to watch. And, you know, I'm really excited for it. I'm kind of looking at my weekend, whether I should make the drive to Salisbury or go to Delaware for the Division I quarterfinals. But we'll see. There's going to be a lot of great games this week and, you know, a lot of great games in D2 as well. But looking at the North, you know, we have this, what we've been calling the NESCAC quadrant of the bracket. And last night, Wesleyan beat Bates 14-13. Shout out to Coach Peter Lasagna for a great season. You know, it was kind of a dream season for Bates. And you know, it came to an end last night against a very good Wesleyan team, their NESCAC rival. And I don't know, you know, well, first, before we move on to Wesleyan, Charlie Fay, you know, what a career. 7 goals and 1 assist. You know, did practically everything he could last night.
106 points on the season.
That's just insane. You know, I know Coach Lasagna has – he had 7 goals and an assist last night, but, you know, the impact of his work ethic has really permeated this program. And, you know, he's – you know, Lasagna talks about how he kind of played in a men's box league, you know, in the offseason, got all of his teammates to kind of join as well. So he's just one of those players that has led the ship in a way that it's really special. And, you know, I know he's going to be a player in Coach Lasagna's long and storied career that is going to stick out to him as one of the special ones. But this Wesleyan team, man, they've got that team of destiny feel to it. You know, we were saying that earlier. They're 20-1. They won 14-13 last night. The number of offensive weapons that they have on this team is just absolutely insane. You know, they Kyle Devitt this past week did a great story on them. You know, they have this, they're known for this backer zone that they run that's, you know, kind of really tough for teams to penetrate and but, you know, this team is a team that's built on offense and look at all of these guys who are putting up just numbers that are just I've never seen them before. You know, I was looking at the numbers in the parentheses next to the player in Kyle's story, and I was like, none of this can be right, but it all was. So it's just going to be so many weapons. It just feels like a team of destiny, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you have two guys who are, you know, one with Harry Stanton with 111 points, Carter Hawthorne with 92, a junior and a sophomore, also a really young team, too. You know, they have one senior kind of in their top, like, almost 10 scorers right there with, you know, Tom DuPont with 43 points. They also haven't lost since March 5th. You know, it's one thing to lose, you know, in April. They have not lost since March 5th in a 14-15 loss to Bates. So, I mean, they've just been a model of consistency all season and a team that has flown on the radar as kind of expected because they're not a perennial, you know, kind of powerhouse. It's been dominated by the Tufts, Amherst, Middleburys historically. So, really awesome, really excited for this program. Hopefully, you know, they can take it to RIT this weekend and you know, kind of finish the storybook season for them.
Yeah, that, you know, they're a team that can attack from both sides of the net. You know, they've got a blend of, you know, kind of sizable midfielders, smaller, you know, quick attackmen who are skilled, and, you know, there's depth there. You know, their third spot, you know, there's two guys who play in their third spot at attack, and you know, those guys together have 50 points is what Coach said in their story last week. You know, really, really special for them. And they're going to go against, though, a team that's, you know, been there before. And Josh, you and I were talking before we hit record here about there's so much talk about parity in Division III lacrosse, but it's been the traditional powers for the past decade and then even going back 20 years who have really dominated kind of the championship landscape. So Wesleyan, you know, how much stock do you put in kind of the fact that, you know, RIT has been there before? You know, they're a team that made it to the national championship. Wesleyan hasn't. I don't know how much stock you put into that thing, but if you look at the Division III championship, in the past decade, there have been 7 different programs total who have been there. In the South, Salisbury, Lynchburg, Stevenson, and Gettysburg. And Gettysburg's was back 10 years ago, so that's not really even recent.
2009 was the last one Gettysburg was in there.
2009. So then you look at the North, it's Tufts, RIT, and Cortland. That's not a lot of different teams, you know, and RIT is one of the few that has made it, and there's something to say about that. If you go back just in from, you know, 2000 on, it's only been 9 teams that have been there. You can add Middlebury and Nazareth into the mix. And then if you go back 20 years, it's only been 10 teams that have been there. You can add Washington College. So really, like, there's got to be something about being a program that's been there, and that's got to kind of be in your back pocket if you're RIT.
I think so for sure. I mean, even, you know, talk about those 4 teams from the South, Lynchburg and Stevenson are 2 new additions to that, and Stevenson was 2013 and Lynchburg was 2015. So, I mean, you discount those 2 seasons, there's only 2 teams from the South and 3 from the North. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And to your point, I agree that I think it's going to serve RIT well. But on the kind of counterpoint, you know, Stevenson and Lynchburg being 2 teams in the last 4 years who have done it, you know, maybe this will be a trend we'll start to see. You know, it's been 20 years. Maybe that's kind of the threshold, and now some of these teams can start to break through. You know, there are some really good teams at the top of these, you know, the North and the South. But I think that kind of old school, historic tradition, you know, we've been there before, speaks volumes. And, you know, I was looking at the back, just go back to Bates real quick. You know, they have all these seniors, and I feel like this was kind of their opportunity to make that run. If we're talking about, you know, the team breaking through, making being a consistent contender, you know, every single year with, you know, so many such a senior laden heavy team. So it even speaks more to Wesleyan as then as well to, you know, be such a young group and be able to kind of weather the storm and get the W there. So I think there are going to be some awesome games this weekend, but I am with you in the fact that I think it serves RIT better in the North and that RIT Wesleyan game.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I mean, RIT's only been there, been to the championship game once.
Right,
so
and
it's not
the
like
same year as Stevenson. So yeah. It's a, you know, similar thing. So really, other than those three kind of breakthrough years, that means there's been, what, four teams total then, which is pretty unbelievable.
And one thing I'm just noticing, you know, we know that RIT is a team that's kind of built on a lot of Canadians, but just looking at the roster, I didn't realize that their top six scorers are from Canada. I mean, I knew Lee, Levick, and Killen, but I mean, you go down the roster pretty far before you find someone who's not from north of the border, and that's a long pole, who is their sixth leading scorer, J.D. Hall, who's from Colorado. So that's just a weird quirk here. You know, it's definitely a clash of styles. RIT and Wesleyan, they're both high scoring teams, but they're both built, you know, fairly differently, and it's going to be a fun one.
Coach Kuhn has done an amazing job in recruiting, and what he's been able to do to drive people to RIT is tremendous. And you know, hats off to him because he has really done an amazing job of getting his guys there. You know, we interviewed him on this podcast back and towards the beginning of the season. He talked about just recruiting good people and people that he wants to embody in his program and are good ambassadors for the RIT program in general. So he's done a really great job of that, and is I think someone, you know, other coaches would look up to as a model of success and how they're recruiting and the kind of kids they're going after. So. Yeah, it's going to be a great weekend. I'm really looking forward to catching some of these games.
RIT had their kind of, you know, they had their down week early in the season, March 18th and March 25th. They lost a pair of games at Dickinson, the Mustang Classic, and then at Clarkson a week later. But since then, you know, that just seems like it was a blip on the radar at this point right now. Since then, you know, they've beaten St. Lawrence twice. They've beaten Cortland twice. You know, they beat Stevenson once before that, and then they beat them again. You know, Ithaca is another team that they kind of beat on this run here. So they're battle-tested, that's for sure. And obviously Wesleyan is, too, playing in that NESCAC schedule. Josh, you know, I think we're kind of both on the same page, but kind of if we go down to predictions here, you know, who do you have in this round? You know, I'll give mine first. You know, I would love to see a new team, but I think I have to go with the favorites. I think it's RIT versus Salisbury in the national championship game at Gillette Stadium.
I would concur. I think it's going to be Salisbury. I think Denison, you know, they've done an amazing job this year, but Salisbury is a completely different animal. And I think that battle-tested, you know, RIT pulls one out at the end of the day over Wesleyan, who's having an awesome season. So, yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be RIT Salisbury. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
But for fans, please don't take that as an indication of not watching. But, you know, they're going to be two great games. I think that's what we can guarantee is, you know, I don't think that either of these favorites is going to coast to the national championship game. I think that they have kind of the pieces that they need to get there, but I don't think they're going to roll through it.
There is this one kind of sidebar rant I want to just throw in here about Division III lacrosse and NCAA. I just have to pick a bone with. I was talking with a club director this week who's also an assistant coach at a Division III school, and you know, I don't know if this has been talked about as much, but there's a rule in for the NCAA that only, I think it's like 35 or 32 guys can dress. And I don't know if it's across the board for Division I and Division II either, but I know it's a rule for Division III. And it is just like the worst rule ever because there, you know, we talk about a lot of these guys, Liam Rooney's and the Ryan Lee's and the, you know, Carson Kalamas as being guys, but, you know, there are guys who don't get to dress for Salisbury and for RIT and for Lynchburg and Denison who are running, you know, Lynchburg's offense. The Denison guys are practicing, you know, some of those look scout guys who, and I just think it's a ridiculous rule that those guys don't get to dress and experience, you know, the same thing that the other 35 guys get to. I think it's a ridiculous rule. And it's just something, you know, one of those things, an experience that you never get to have again. And whether it's a travel cost thing, you know, or, you know, those kids are still traveling with the team. The only difference is they're just not suiting up on the sideline. And I don't really understand kind of the root of the rule at all. But it's one thing in Division III that I have to pick a bone with, one thing that has to change. I remember when I was in school, you know, we tried to fight that rule a little bit because those guys deserve to be on the field just as much as some of those other guys who were scoring the 106 points throughout the season. So had to throw in just a little kind of a side tangent there that is just a little frustrating for me as we watch these games. And then you see 15 guys wearing their Denison or Lynchburg or Salisbury T-shirts in the stands because they're just not allowed to stand on the sideline. So just a little frustration had to vent, get off my chest.
No, that's definitely it seems like every year, like I haven't talked to a coach who says this is a great rule.
Or why it is.
There's no reason. There's like the teams will foot the bill for those players to get there, especially at this level of these programs that are invested in the sport. You know, they'll find a way for those players to get there, and it's not going to be any extra cost for the NCAA. Maybe the NCAA, you know, there's a certain level of we won't give any accommodations for, you know, for players after this, but let the teams at least pay the money or right. do whatever they need to do to make it work. Cover right.
They don't even
logistics.
Give them that opportunity to do that. And those kids work so hard. You know, it's harder. I think it's harder to be on a team where you aren't the leading scorer and playing every game for 4 years. Then, you know, it's a lot harder to sit on the bench, you know, for 4 years, for 3 years, than it is to be the leading scorer, obviously. You know, I think it says you take a lot more of being on a team and knowing your role and stuff like that. I think it serves you almost better in life afterwards. You know, it takes a real, you know, kind of special person to be able to commit to something like that when you don't aren't necessarily reaping the benefits on the field. So it's just frustrating. I was talking about with the coach this week, and you know, it's disappointing. But
and that's where you see the players like swarm the field after the game, and someone's going to get hurt, you know, because they're in the stands and they want to celebrate with their teammates.
Right.
You know, so I remember Dowling winning the national championship, the D2 championship up at Gillette Stadium, and those guys just like ran onto the field. You know, I think it was a combination of players and fans, but you know, I think we've seen it pretty much every year. There's at least a handful of guys who are on the team that just say screw it and jump over the barricade and go
hard.
There and celebrate.
You work so hard, and even those guys who aren't, like I said, you know, scoring all the points in the games or, you know, making all the saves, like, you're only as good as, you know, you're kind of your weakest player. They're practicing against their first team guys every day, giving them great looks, and it's just it's bothers me, it irks me, it gets under my skin. So had to get it off my chest.
I can tell you're fuming just talking about it. But, yeah, this is going to be a great weekend. You know, I'm not sure the weather forecast, you know, up there at RIT, but, you know, it's spring, so I imagine it's going to be at least all right out there. Support these games. If you can't be there, watch the live streams. That's how these things grow, is athletic directors, administrators see seats in the crowd. They see a good experience for the athletes, and that's what makes them think, I should add lacrosse, I should support the team that we do have. Support these players, and then, you know, the sport will support them as well. So please do that, and we will be back next week. It will be the championship preview edition of the Division III podcast, and we're looking forward to it. So we hope you are as well.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.